責めないで削らないで負けないで誰だって。 This is the Otaku in Review podcast. I'm Scott Spazzini from Otaku in Review.
I'm Shannon, aka Perfect Serenade.
And I'm Michael Camacho of G-Nitro.com. This is our 2021 spring season preview, recorded on April 27th, 2021.
Love that walrus. Hello, welcome to the White Claw Aficionado podcast. I'm here, of course, every week with Shannon. Shannon, how are you?
I'm good. Let's roll. Today, I'm ready to talk about anime.
This week we're talking about the Series 3 variety pack. We got mango, we got pineapple. We've got strawberry, we've got blackberry. Which one are you most excited about?
Blackberry. Definitely blackberry.
Yeah, we also have a special guest this week who is here by, you know, he won our contest of emailing in 10,000 times with the special topic. There's a little fuzzy here. It says, stop talking about that bullshit and drink some real alcohol. Our special guest, Michael Camacho.
I was actually hoping that you would like say something very close, and then I had to correct you and say what it actually said.
Is that what it says? Is that what it was? Or did I get it?
Got it right. Stop drinking that bullshit.
Good. All right. No, this is this podcast is only very loosely about alcohol. Okay, very heavily about alcohol. One third of it is very heavily about alcohol, specifically the Michael
Camacho. It's recorded on alcohol.
But we're here. We're going to talk about Mugen Train. That's right. It's sweeping the nation. It's beating Mortal Kombat.
What the hell are you talking about?
Right. Someone
what
has
is this?
Fire.
I don't even know what
someone
this is.
Someone has water. Someone, it's
there's some
I
swords
saw it yesterday.
There's some swords swinging around.
What is Mugen Train?
There's a train.
I saw it in theaters for the first time. I've been in a theater since February. It was very uncomfortable. There
since
were people
February?
Very close to me.
February last year or February,
February
like
2020? Let
okay,
me
I was
clarify.
Like, wait a minute. I was like, wait, you made it sound like a long time ago, but you said February.
Here's my review of it. If you like Demon Slayer, there's more of it. Go watch it. Anyway, we're going to talk about some spring preview shows.
Yes.
Some new anime. Not anime movies that came out in 2019 and it took 2 years to get here because of a pandemic.
Sorry.
Are you okay?
No, my shoulder. I lifted it up like, yes, dude. But I got the shot today and it fucking hurts.
You bunch of
dude,
pussies.
This shit is like...
Ah, I know.
This reminds me of the last time I got a tetanus shot. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Bunch but of whiny babies.
I am bearing a lead.
Why
because,
is it hurt underneath
last
it?
Weekend, I did get my second COVID vaccine, which means that this is the last episode of Otaku Interview, because I have better things to do now that I am immune than talk to you assholes about Japanese bullshit.
Yes, because we all know how much you go out of the house.
Well, let's see.
Or
let's
any
see
of
if they
us.
Ever make,
to be honest,
ever...
to be honest, any of us leave the house.
Let's see if they ever make me go back to work. All
let's
right,
think about so... it. We go out of the house just enough that we hang out once a year.
Pretty much.
As all three of us.
and they keep canceling it on us. They just keep canceling on us because of some kind of liberal conspiracy.
No, it's
anyway.
More because we can't even make these weebs wear deodorant for a full weekend. You think they're going to get vaccinated?
God damn it. Anyway, I reviewed Mugen Train. I'm putting that in the description. We're going to get a lot of clicks, but we're actually talking about spring anime. My full review is, you know, Demon Slayer is all right. It's okay.
Never seen it.
It's okay. I like it just fine. It's a good B tier shonen. I mean, it's no JoJo's.
That's terrible.
No.
But it's okay. This Mugen Train's a very pretty movie. You should watch it. But no, we're gonna talk about new anime that's coming out in the spring 2021. I'm talking very fast because somebody was a half hour late for the recording, so our recording time is truncated. I'm looking at you, Michael Camacho.
What? I'm not the one who fell asleep, and I'm the one who got the vaccine.
No, I'm just
God
saying I'm
is
looking
telling
at
lies.
You. I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying
I should be the tired one right now.
Why? Well, what do you mean? I got shot up. I got shot up a couple days ago.
And
come at me, COVID-19. COVID-19.
Let's talk about some anime. You sleepy bastard.
All right, Scott, you go get your coffee, and Mike and I, Mike and I are going to talk about Pretty Boy Detective Club.
Yeah.
So go get your coffee.
About this one anime that I couldn't get
to work. I'm actually
going to
join in a discussion about Pretty Boy.
Because Funimation is a bad service.
I'm going to talk about that.
I tried to watch
it.
Let me give you my review of Pretty Boy Detective Club. I looked at a black screen for 45 seconds and then got frustrated, and then I went to watch something on Crunchyroll. That's my review of Pretty Boy Detective Club.
I agree, because I'm canceling my Funimation after this season.
I just re-freaking subbed. Ugh.
It sucks.
I know, it's frustrating. My issue that I usually have, it's not necessarily a dark screen or anything, but the subtitles are constantly dropping. Like, in the middle of an episode, the subtitles just drop.
Pretty Boy Detective Club, before we talk about the show itself, episode 2, if I'm on the Roku app, it would drop at 3.5 minutes, mm-hmm. and it wasn't just me. On Twitter, a lot of people were hitting them up like, yo, what's up with the subtitles? I went to Xbox, it worked. Then I moved to another show I'm going to talk about later, and I couldn't even get to episode 2 because I'm on my Xbox, and the subtitles were off by at least a minute. They were a minute ahead of what I was watching, because she was talking, and I'm like, she's just making breakfast and just not talking to anything. Like, what is going on? They kept playing these subtitles. I'm like, am I missing something? Is she talking and I can't hear it?
Right. No, I mean, yeah, you're not the only one that's been having those issues with Funimation.
But I'm like, you're sitting here trying to fight against piracy and you're giving them every reason to continue it. It's such a bad look. It's 2021 and Funimation, after everybody's been home for a year, doesn't know how streaming works?
Right.
It's not good.
No. But let's talk about the anime itself.
Okay. So I've talked about the light novels before. We'll do a brief rundown. Pretty Boy Detective Club is about Mayumi Dojima, a second-year student at a Yubiwa private academy. She has been on a hunt for a star for about 10 years since she was young and saw a star while she was with her family on a beach trip. She turns to the Pretty Boy Detective Club to help her find her star. I've talked about this before, so I don't want to go too deep. But the Pretty Boy Detective Club is made up of Hyota, Manabu, Michiru, Nagahiro, and Sosaku. Those are the 5 pretty boys in the Detective Club. So this anime this season was done by Shinbo. Who is from Shaft. For those who are interested, he did the Monogatari series, which is also done by the writer of Pretty Boy Detective Club. He's also done Madoka Magica, Dance of the Vampire Bun, and a lot of other popular series. Hidamari Sketch. Like, he's one of the best directors out there. So I was super hyped for this, even if the light novels have been leaving me a little lately. So, I went a little further, so Shannon, I'll let you talk about it first.
I mean, look, this would have been my kind of anime maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I used to be really into, like, the whole Bishonen pretty boy type thing, and just, like, the really cutesy anime. And while this anime is very beautiful, I mean, it is gorgeous. The storyline of the whole, like, trying to find the star that she saw in the sky and she lost it. It doesn't do enough for me, I guess. And the whole, it was very, to me, it seemed very, like, try hard to be kind of whimsical. And for me, it kind of felt a little flat. And honestly, I didn't get to, like, a second episode. I knew that I wasn't going to be interested in it after the first one. But I mean, if you're really into, like, the whole, like, I mean, it's, like I said, it's beautiful, so I would at least give it a shot to watch it, you know, just for that, to see if it's, like, something up your alley. But for me, you know, it's it just didn't hit that mark.
Yeah. So, just to say, the whole star thing turns into something completely different in the second episode, where you find out what it really is, and it runs a lot deeper. But it's really, so Nisio Eason is a writer who has always been, I've talked about it a lot, is really good with the banter and writing dialogue between characters. And I felt like, I've watched Monogatari and I thought the dialogue was good, but not as good as the light novels. I like this anime better than the light novel already. I feel like one of the problems with the light novel, because you're just reading and seeing like drawn pictures of the pretty boys, they work better here. The interactions work better with them talking, because I feel like getting to constantly see them speak and how they act it out comes across better than like using your imagination when it comes to this particular anime. Because it's called Pretty Boy Detective Club. When you're reading the light novel, you just have some pictures to go off here and there. Nisio Eason's light novels aren't like a lot of others. There's not like you're reading 20 pages and then there's obviously the artist threw in their drawing of one of the most recent interactions or action sequences. No, Nisio Eason is like, you get the characters up front and a little picture towards the end and that's it, and maybe at the chapters. So you really don't get a lot of the characters a lot. And I thought, because of Shinbo making this such a gorgeous anime, he did it again. Like, if you love Shinbo, I think Scott would enjoy this just from the artistic styling, because he nails it. The eyes, by the way, of all these characters are gorgeous.
Yeah, that's,
this might be the prettiest eyes I've ever seen.
Honestly, it's one of the prettiest anime that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's just a little cutesy for me.
So yeah. It's meant to be interesting because all the pretty boys, well, everybody has flaws to them. Some of them just kind of talk around it. But you start seeing various things like in this one that there's a much deeper story of revolving around Mayumi and the star. I don't want to spoil it since it's still airing, but I actually recommend this show, especially if you were even mediocre on the light novels, because I think it actually produces better. And I don't normally say the anime is better than the light novel, but I enjoyed the first two episodes a lot more than reading the books. I thought it was interesting that the first light novel seems like it's going to cover the first three episodes, because where they stopped on episode two, I expected them to wrap it up, and I was shocked. I was like, damn. They're actually pushing this another episode. So I assume they're going to do two or three episodes per volume.
Okay.
I look forward to continuing it. I know Shannon says to check it out. She thinks
it's worth it.
Interesting,
you know?
For the looks and art. I recommend it all around. I really had a lot of fun this season with the shows.
I kind of fell flat a little
Pretty
bit.
Pretty Boy Detective Club is good. Hmm?
I said mine kind of fell flat a little bit. So I think you're a little more optimistic about the spring shows than I've been.
Yeah, I was surprised to see you go full Funimation.
Yeah, me too.
I thought you had Crunchyroll still.
So can I go into one of mine then?
Yeah, go
for it. The one that I really was really interested in seeing this season was the new remake. Well, I wouldn't say remake. Well, it's kind of a remake, but Battle Athletes Restart. Now, Battle Athletes is an old anime that I used to be really into. It came back out in the 90s, and it actually had an OAV or OVA, and then it had a 20-something episode series. And the basic idea of Battle Athletes is, you have all of these girls who are competing in various types of sports, and it's kind of like, you know, it's set in the future, and they all go to this thing called University Satellite. And it's where, like, the best athletes, women, train to become something called the Cosmic Beauty. And I don't want to give too much away, but, like, the Cosmic Beauty turns out to be something more than just a crown, so to speak. And the original Battle Athletes, while it had some problematic things, such as the way that they portrayed the girl from South Africa, and then the other problematic thing about the Battle Athletes was the Chinese character, she was given in the dub a very like stereotypical broken English kind of accent, which is, you know, it's not a good look. So my biggest hope for the new series, the Battle Athletes Restart, was that they would kind of be a little more, you know, not so stereotyped like characters. And, you know, for the most part, they are, from what I can see. I've gotten 2 episodes in so far. But I will have to say that I'm overall kind of disappointed with this new Battle Athletes. You know, the animation, it's just terrible. It's so blocky. And in the original TV series, the original one in the 90s, like, you start off and it's like competition. Like, every episode is a competition. And while it almost seems like that would prevent you from learning about the characters and understanding the characters a little bit better than, like, you know, non-competition scenes, it actually really... Because I rewatched, so I watched the second episode of the Restart, and then I went back and I started watching the old series again, and I realized the old one has so much charm, and the story and the competition aspect are done so well that you just, the way the characters progress is just very, very natural, and you become attached to the characters fairly easily. And not to mention the animation in the old series was pretty good in 90s standards.
How are you watching the old series?
So thanks to you for my birthday present. You got me the Blu-ray that has the OVA and the full 20-something episode TV series. So that's how I've been watching it. And I've been watching the dub because, honestly, outside of the like weird problematic like voiceover with the Chinese character, the dub's actually not too bad. It's one of the more tolerable ones that I find. And so the old story, while I think the reason why I was so drawn to it was because it's you know, it's basically female Olympics in space. So you're not getting your typical, like, you know, gravity restricted competitions. So, like, you'll have there's a competition where, like, you have to, it's like kind of like volleyball but with your feet, and there's less gravity, which is, I don't know, it's just really cool. Like, the whole premise of the story was really neat, and I like the way that they did the competitions. But in the new one, there's more of the non-competition scenes. So basically, like, you're I don't want to say like your everyday life type stuff, but, like, you know, it's not quite as what's the word I'm trying to look for? What is that genre of anime? Slice of life. It's to me, it seems more like a slice of life than a sports anime. And while the new anime has a whole new set of characters, one thing that I really kind of enjoyed about it was that there are little Easter eggs that are thrown out that if you had watched the old series in the 90s, you'd be like, aha, I get that. So the main character in the old series, her name is Akari, and in the new one is Kanata, I believe. And they kind of have similar hairstyles. And at one point in the first episode, you know, Kanata's walking down... she's walking down this hallway, and it's got, you know, the pictures of the previous Cosmo Beauties. And in one of the images, you kind of see, like, Akari in you know, hanging up as one of the Cosmic Beauties or Cosmo Beauties. And I thought that was pretty cool. And then they have a bunch of characters with similar names. So in the old one, you had Chris Christopher, and in this new one, you've got Yana Christopher, and then Gertlin and Respighi. So they're different characters overall, but like I said, there are a lot of really kind of like cool shout outs to the old series. So if you had seen that, you would be like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, you know, oh, I get that. But yeah, so I was kind of disappointed with the new one. And the one big, in the second episode, the one big competition is like this weird kind of like non-gravity game of dodgeball. They're in like this little sphere, and they kind of have to, you know, they're literally playing dodgeball. It's like 2v2 dodgeball. And the animation is just so bad and so clunky. The way that they move is just bizarre. And at one point, it's almost like they took the character model and then, you know, digitally made it spin. So it's not even like it was being animated. It was just like taking this one frame and then just literally spinning it around to make it seem like she's spinning through this sphere.
Wow.
So it was bad. I'm going to continue to watch it just because, I mean, it's Battle Athletes. I love Battle Athletes. Yeah. But for the most part, I was kind of disappointed in it. Oh, one thing that I do hope that they continue to keep is in the old TV series, there was a lot of like kind of gay undertones with the characters. And yeah. While, you know, they did it well, I think, from, you know, just like the character writing and the way that they interacted. I hope they keep that because that actually made some of the characters pretty charming and in the way that they interacted with each other. So I hope that's something that they do.
I'm sure they will.
I hope they do keep that. Cause
that's usually a big thing with any anime now that's filled with young girls.
Yeah.
They try to add in those little undertones.
But it wasn't like, you know, crazy, like, you know, it wasn't your typical perverted anime type of undertones.
No, I mean, but I mean,
it was no, it's no Citrus.
No, but like Eurocamp has it. K-On! Has it. They all have those little, like, obviously there's some interest, but it never explores it.
Right. Well, yeah. Battle Athletes, the old one, it did kind of happen a little bit, but I just hope that's something that they decide to keep going forward with this new series. So that's Battle Athletes Restart.
I'm going to talk about Fairy Ramaru, which is a show that I recommended for you, Shannon.
And okay.
I want to try to convince you to watch it today. So, and I don't know how really to summarize this show in a way that doesn't make it sound absolutely bonkers. But couple points to it is that this is like an all original animation production, which is cool. We don't see a ton of those.
Yeah.
And it's the best way it is reverse Sailor Moon combined with I guess, well, let's start at reverse Sailor Moon. So it stars five fairies who have been tasked by the Fairy Queen to come to Earth and to heal broken hearts or cruelty. So these five fairies take the form of beautiful high school boys, and they are, you know, they all like work in a mysterious bar called Bar F, and then they, you know, they give away these business cards to people who are being you know, that they witness having cruelty acted upon them, and then the people have to, I guess, choose that they need help, and then they come and ask for help, and then they're allowed, you know, then the fairies will help them. But essentially, there's some kind of evil fairy who is cursing people in the human world and causing them to do terribly cruel things to other people, and the fairies will identify them, and then they go through a magical girl style transformation, and then a Modica Magica style battle sequence in order to defeat them. I, you know, the first episode kind just is very silly. It is just a lot of, it's like, what is going on? This is a bunch of nonsense. But then the second episode, I think, really kind of cements what the show is supposed to be. And specifically, it highlights So I mean, essentially, if we're doing the Sailor Moon analogy, then Renmaru would be more like the Sailor Moon, you know, in that he's kind of completely selfless and wants to do good and doesn't know how to go about it, right? But then each of the other characters has a special ability and their own personality. But the second episode is mostly about Hamura, who is the Fire Fairy. And I guess that the Fire Fairy family has this history of being confrontational with all the other clans. And each clan has its own special type of magic. But specifically, the Hamaru sees someone in need and then actually like actively doesn't want to help them until he's reminded of what their mission is and what the whole purpose is, and then kind of reluctantly goes through the motions and helps, and kind of you actually see this kind of character arc form. So that kind of shows what they're going for. It's like it's Sailor Moon, but each character has a more distinct personality and abilities, but also they're beautiful men. And I'm going to share an image of what these transformations look like in the chat. And I want a live reaction from you, Shannon.
Okay. What the fuck? I don't even know what I'm looking at. Those are so what I'm looking at.
Sailor Moon mixed with JoJo?
Yes. Oh my god, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then,
straight up.
And then the battles are definitely like Modica Magica, where the art style changes when they enter this secondary world, and they have to battle the cruelty that has been implanted in these normal characters.
Well, I do have a confession. Yeah, I have a confession that I've never seen Modica, however you say it.
It's one of those you have to. I always tell people, if you're ever going to give it a shot, you have to watch to at least episode 3, or you will not get the full experience of what that show offers.
That is what I hear. Oh my god.
I also worry that there was a time and place for Madoka that I think that now that we're past that may not be.
It depends.
Because there's been so many copycats since.
But if you have, but she hasn't. I know Shannon hasn't watched a lot of the new Magical
Girl
shows.
No, I haven't.
So I think she would go into this with not looking at it like, God, I've seen other stuff like this since this came out.
So you know, to be perfectly honest, this type of show is not it's not my genre.
I was gonna say, Scott, this
I was convinced to watch. I was tricked into watching it by the person who lives with me, and I couldn't. You know, I just kind of couldn't look away because it was kind of such a. It was such a, like an animation like fest. So it's beautiful, and yeah. I think it's kind of worth checking out if any of what I said seems tempting.
They've got some serious packages.
I've got a my.
I mean, just they've got some really big. I mean, these dudes they're straight out wearing thongs, and you know what? I kind of dig it. I dig this. I think. You kind of just showing me these pictures. You've convinced me because I don't know. I kind of dig this. It's kind of hot.
Yeah. So pictures.
I don't know. Maybe it's because like I'm bisexual that I'm attracted to both the male and female side. But I dig it.
And I guess, yeah, they are very feminine, yet manly boys.
Yes.
Because they're the normal, like, high school mode is a very, like, normal Bishoujo kind of non-threatening character, and then they become fucking JoJo's nonsense
characters. I kind of like that. I'm looking forward to this one now. I think I might have to go watch that with my husband out in the living room after this podcast.
I think that'll be very entertaining for both of you.
All right. So, I just want to go through one. I'm going to do a real quick one here. Did you like Euro Camp?
Did.
Kind of.
Do you want Euro Camp, but with a scooter.
But there were scooters in Euro Camp.
Yeah. So, did you like the scooter parts in Euro Camp?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So, Super Cub is the show for you. Main character. So,
I just want to say Super Club is the other
Cub.
Super Cub is the other Funimation show I attempted to watch, but stared at a blank screen for 45
seconds. Yeah,
I
was talking about it when you had to step away real quick. This is the one where the subtitles were off by a minute on the second episode, and I gave up and said, I guess I'm not watching anymore of this show. It wasn't good enough to try to find a way around it.
Yeah, I was listening to that conversation, even though I wasn't present.
Okay.
But I want to just add, while we're now circling back to it, is that I wonder how much of that is Sony getting ready to dump Funimation and move everything to the Crunchyroll infrastructure.
Because
that's certainly possible. Hmm?
Has it been announced they bought them yet?
Yeah. Oh, no. Funimation. Yeah, no. Sony owns both Crunchyroll and Funimation now.
I thought it was, like, right at the cusp.
They own Funimation. Yeah, and that's like, one of the reasons why Mugen Train got such a wide release, because Sony put their money behind it.
Yeah.
And that's why it almost beat Mortal Kombat at the theaters, even though Mortal Kombat was in double the showing, because they just really... They got it in more theaters than I think any anime movie Funimation's ever had. So,
well, for what I got to see of this show on Funimation, Super Cub, Koguma is a high school girl. She has no parents, friends, or anything else really going on in life. The show starts off with her just waking up, making breakfast, riding her bike to school, pretty much hating it. She's tired by the end, and then she's in school, eats her bland meal, and then rides her bike home, but sees somebody on a scooter and decides to go check out a scooter shop. Realizing she doesn't have the money for it, a guy offers her a scooter for super cheap. Turns out whoever owned the scooter died on the scooter, so people didn't want to buy it. We all know how superstitious Japan can be. She's like, I don't care. So, she gets her new scooter. Well, she gets her license first, comes back, gets the scooter. And the show kind of just goes with her first day. Like, the first episode is just her first day and night with that scooter, where she's like, oh, I need to go get something. I can just go to the store now. And she runs out of gas. So, she realizes there's always a reserve tank. She reads the manual, pops that, gets to a gas station, fills it up. Now, from what I've read, the second episode has her meeting a classmate, and this kind of starts the new, like, Super Cub, and she's opening up to the world, like, we've seen this before. And she starts making friends this way. So it's definitely very much Eurocamp-type vibes or K-On!-type vibes, because it's just a girl didn't know what she wanted to do and joins the music club back in K-On! Days. So this one is probably going to be way more chill. I don't know how the other two girls really are. I think this is a Scott show to a T. I would have liked to at least watch episode 2, but with the problems with Funimation, I didn't enjoy episode 1 enough to continue to try to make Funimation work. So, Super Cub, there's going to be a very dedicated audience to this show.
It's not
going to make waves.
Just looking at, like, the style and what the theme is.
Yeah, it's got nice animation too. Like, the animation's nice.
Yeah, I think, like, definitely like an anime that came to be because of the success.
I was surprised it was a light novel originally, because it feels like something I don't think I'd want to read as a light novel.
Well, Eurocamp was also a light novel. So.
Yeah, but that one, at least the characters are more energetic.
Mm-hmm.
The main character here is just very quiet, keeps to herself type person. Just goes through her motions through the day. That's why I was like, I couldn't imagine reading this.
Well, yeah, but that is also the main character, the main character of Eurocamp.
What?
Before.
Who do you think the main character of Eurocamp is?
The solo camper.
No. That's definitely not the main character.
I think
not a Shiko is the main character.
See, that's
of
what
Eurocamp.
I. That's not what I got.
That's what every description says. Not a Shiko, a high school student.
I'm with Scott on this one though.
Nadashiko was
Scott on this one, Mike.
Sorry. Nadashiko was definitely the Yui main character like K-On was.
I guess there might be there. It's like a certain type of person who believes like, you know, Gandalf is the protagonist of Lord of the Rings.
Something like that.
They want the cool collected character to be the main character.
Nadashiko was definitely the main character. She's the driving.
No,
that's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. She is. You're right. She likely is the protagonist because she is the character that sees the most growth over the series.
She's Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah, she's Bilbo Baggins, but
Rin,
and I want to hang out with Gandalf.
Yeah, we'd rather Gandalf. So am I going to go on my last one? Are you done?
You're already at your last? Oh, yeah.
I am on my last
one. I'm going to have more than everybody, so go ahead.
Okay, so the other one that I was really looking forward to this season was also on Funimation, called Mars Red. Now, the reason why I wanted to get into Mars Red is because, you know, It's set in, like, you know, back in, I can't remember what year, but it's been a while. It's set back a while. I should have my Wikipedia open, but I don't remember, because honestly, I was really disappointed in this series, which I feel like I'm just disappointed all the time in everything I watch these days. But so Mars Red basically is about vampires in 1920 something Japan, I think. And
this is a constant theme for you.
Yeah, it is. Oh my gosh, it really is, because it's very similar. It kind of gives me the same similar vibes as Sirius the Egger. So I guess that's probably why that I really was interested in watching it. So Mars Red, the first episode, it starts off and you follow this guy who is some type of something in the Japanese military. He's kind of, you know, very stone cold, cold faced personality. You don't really learn a whole lot about him the first episode, but you know that he has something to do with tracking down vampires. And the first episode is just so confusing. You walk away from it not having any idea what the fuck the series is about. Yeah, it's about vampires, and you got this kind of Brody dude, and then you've got this vampire chick who is an actress in a local play. She's kind of locked up, and she keeps, like, reciting the lines from this play that she's in, and it tries very, very hard to be poetic, but it just comes off as extremely confusing. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? I don't want to drop this yet. I want to watch the second episode. So just be prepared to walk away from the first episode going like, what the fuck did I just watch? The second episode, things get explained a little bit better. You find out that the main guy, Maeda, he is not a vampire, but he is in charge of, like, this kind of, he gets put in charge in this band of kind of like misfit vampires, where they all have to kind of work together to track down vampires, like kind of rogue vampires. And vampires are becoming more and more kind of known. They used to kind of be in the dark. They used to kind of like keep to themselves. But for some reason, they're becoming more and more bold. And you meet like this misfit of vampire, quote unquote, hunters. And it just, I don't know, it, the animation, I feel like if the animation had been a little bit better, it would have been more bearable. And I think I'm going to give a third episode a try just to see where it leads, because in the second episode, you get this squad, and you start learning about them very briefly, kind of like on the surface. And I don't know. I'm not quite sure where it's going. I'm not quite sure where it's headed. It's not really based off of a light novel. I think it's based off of like a screenplay of some sort or some type of
manga.
You see a manga? See, I didn't even know. I didn't even know
that.
Started
in 2019.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't even know that. But I don't know. I was just so disappointed with it. It tries a little too hard, like I said, to be poetic. And I just wish that it was a little more streamlined. I wish that it would, you know, I mean, I get it. It's only two episodes in, but I wish it explained a little bit more about what was happening in the world, because you really don't quite know. I'm going to give it probably another episode or two, and then I'm going to make my decision on whether or not I want to drop it, because I was really pulled in by the whole premise and the original art that came out for it. But again, this is another one that left me disappointed. I was more disappointed in this than the new Battle Athletes.
Wow.
So yeah.
Because vampires?
Yeah, because vampires. I love watching anime about vampires. I mean,
I'm glad you said anime, because I was about to make a Twilight joke. But...
Well, no, ooh. I didn't like Twilight. We're not gonna get into that one. But I did like the old Anne Rice books. So. But yes, those were Battle Athletes, Restart, and then Mars Red were my two to review. And yeah, disappointed in both.
So, I'm going to talk about probably the most convoluted title. And, well, this is maybe something. No, Mike has the most convoluted title out of all of them. But anyway, this one's called Joran, the Princess of Snow and Blood. One of those ridiculous titles. So it's set in alternate history Japan. It's the 64th year of the Meiji era, 1931, for anyone who doesn't know the Japanese calendar system, you heathens.
Sure.
And the Tokugawa shogunate never left Japan, right? The nation of Japan discovered the Dragon Vein. It's a unique energy source within its own borders that allowed Japan to dramatically increase its technological progress through the Edo period. Despite this unexpected prosperity, the government is threatened by an insurgent group known as Kunichawa, which hates the isolationist policies of Tokugawa and aims to overthrow the shogunate. In response, the Tokugawa government has created a secret police organization dedicated to rooting out Kuchiwara. So, I'm gonna say that this is a super right-wing fascist show, right? Because it just in its premise, it's about this kind of like superior Japan that exists in an alternate history, where they don't need Western technology or resources in order to thrive, and this organization that is loyal to the shogun is trying to stop a group from overthrowing it. My guess is that there's something more to it, but that's that. From I watched 1.5 episodes. That's my initial thought. So, but
it looks good, but the reviews don't seem to be
favorable. Yeah, the art looks really good, and the action is pretty good. So, the description doesn't do it a lot of justice, because it doesn't highlight the supernatural elements. That this organization that is trying to take down the shogunate is essentially like they're humans who can transform into monsters, werebeasts and such. And the Hue all have these powers that are given to them by this dragon vein energy. So Joran, you know, basically is a swordswoman who is enhanced by this energy. And so she's got super speed, and her slashes are highlighted by this energy. The animation of her jaw kind of becomes like a skeletal figure when she fights. And it's all nice and beautiful, but like it's gonna be, you know, the story is gonna be one of those very, very slow political dramas, which just by the what is established in the first and second episodes seems to be very much like some of the worst of like the right wing Japanese propaganda, which sometimes sneaks its way into anime. Again, it could turn a corner later on, so I don't want that to dissuade people, but that's just my feeling from it. So the part of it is that Joran is taking care of this young girl, and we don't get the full answer of it other than her parents were killed, and she has taken on the responsibility, and is, they're living together as sisters. But then there's also the feeling that this organization, the government organization, wants Joran dead as well, despite the fact that she works for them and is defending the shogunate. They want her dead, so they're like, some of them are disappointed that she didn't die in the first episode during this combat. And then I kept pushing on. I watched the half of the second episode. It was despite it being 2 a.m. and late, because the first episode ended with the young girl going up to Joran's bed with a knife and with the motion to stab her. But then at 15 minutes into the second episode, they don't actually touch on that. It's like it never happened. So I don't know what's going on there. I don't know. It seems like it's going to be very dry and could be super propagandy.
Sawa Yukimura.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one that changes into the Joran, skeleton face.
Yep.
So, if I remember correctly, Yuki, doesn't that mean snow?
Yes.
Because that's what Yuki Onna is, the snow woman. That's why I'm wondering if that's why they gave her this name. It's kind of like a play.
She's a blue-blooded changeling who can partially transform into a white crow.
That's what I'm saying. It sounds like they kind of took a play on the snow woman thing. And even threw it into her name. Look at me, I'm a regular Charles Dunbar.
All right, Mike, go ahead. What else you got?
All right, so stop me if you've heard this before. So I was checking out this high school harem rom-com called Os. You didn't stop me. if you've heard this before. So, Osamake, rom-com where the childhood friend won't lose, is the full name of this title. So I had two convoluted titles. I just gave you the shortened version on the outline, Scott. So this show is about Maru, who is in love with one of his classmates, who's a writer. They kind of had an interaction where he came up to her and told her how much he loved her novel. She was super happy to hear. And in school, though, she's kind of super popular, a little cold to people. Nobody really knows that he's had this interaction and talks to her out. But he wants to confess to her. But his childhood friend confessed to him first. Her name is Kuraha. Shida. Shida. We'll go with that. And they talk about this in the classroom. He's like, I'm sorry I turned you down. Well, Kachi, the one that he confessed that he liked her light novels and hadn't confessed his actual love yet, overhears this, and you see her already all of a sudden say to a friend, well, I'm going to date this other actor. And he's heartbroken. This starts the whole wonderful misunderstandings of an anime rom-com. And the childhood friend says he will help, or she will help him get revenge. So this is one of the problems I have with this show. The childhood friend, in the way she wants to get revenge, is ways that 100% benefit her and 100% make him look bad and the other girl look terrible. I'm not even gonna say it borders on toxic. It's fucking toxic. I was watching this and I was like, wow, this is really great. Except when she starts really trying to get into this whole, this is what we're going to do for revenge. And I'm always like, every time it like pulls me away and I'm like, please stop. It's really annoying when it gets down to that part, because the rest of the show and the characters, even Sheeta, I like her when she's not being toxic. I think she's a fine character. It kind of pulls you out every time. And I went to the episode 2, like, okay, I'll watch 2 episodes like I have been doing. And you come to find out there's more backstory about how Maru actually knows Kachi, and how he also has some beef, unbeknownst to him, to the guy Kachi claimed she was going to be dating. But that all that comes up from his past. And again, episode 2 started going better. I was like, okay, we're past that toxic part. And Sheeta brought back that toxicity again. And I was just like, please stop this. Like, you've got a good show going. It's a good rom-com. It's not amazing, but it's good. But you keep taking me out. I'll probably watch another 2 episodes at some point of the show to see if that toxicity keeps going, because I'd like to see if that stops. I feel like I'll enjoy this show. But that character at times, I'm just like, yo, this has got to stop. It's a little too much. But I think that a lot of people who are more into the harem rom-coms will really enjoy Osamake. If you can look past Sheeta's personality at times, it actually has some things going for it. That's what sucks. I had really mixed feelings about the show, where I'm like, this is great. No, this is not good. This is not good. Please stop. So that's Osamake in a nutshell.
Doesn't sound like a stellar recommendation.
I think people who are into this style of show should check it out and make for themselves. People who are looking for something that might step out of the box of a typical harem rom-com, you're not gonna enjoy it.
Fair enough.
I can only recommend this to people who are looking for this type of show. That's it.
And that would not be me.
Nope.
So, I'm gonna talk about Odd Taxi. So Odd Taxi is, well, for one, it takes place in a world where everyone is an anthropomorphized animal. That's number one. Its main character is a walrus, and is the best walrus ever, because he represents all of us. And he drives a taxi. That's the show. Oh, Mike's not there.
Serious? That's the show.
So the walrus is Odokawa. He's a taxi driver. He lives quote an ordinary life. He's kind of like he's approaching middle age. He's a bachelor, and you know he drives his taxi late into the night, sleeps during the day, and then he sometimes goes to a isekai at night and hangs out with some of the locals, but ultimately is really just not doing much. His hobby, he listens to a Ragoku on the radio and before going to bed. He really doesn't have too many friends either. Like, he's friendly with his family doctor, he's friendly with one of his old high school classmates, but it's really mostly a solitary life where he just drives people around. Some of the people are interesting, some are not. Due to the fact that he is kind of driving these people around and interacting with lots of interesting people, he gets pulled into some weird circumstances. So episode 1, it shows that he has kind of a beef with a local police officer and his partner, but there's not a lot of information on what that is. There's kind of a story in the background of a missing high school girl, by the second episode, it is implied that Odokawa is hiding this missing high school girl in his house.
That's not weird.
She ran away from home. not sexually.
That's just weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a little weird.
But so, I mean, so he's a walrus, so...
he's a walrus. No, it's like, I mean, so the second episode, he's talking to nobody, right? Well, talks to, like, a closed door and basically, like, asks, like, why did you come here? to and gets silence as an answer, and then just leaves for the day. And so that's the only hint in the first two episodes that we get that he might be involved in this girl who disappeared, but not in a way that makes him culpable. I don't think, other than the fact that he hasn't reported it yet. But also, by episode two, there's a subplot going up where the nurse who works at his local clinic is, you know, has a crush on him, and he has to kind of deal with that and but she's also is kind of hiding something because she kind of takes his taxi to weird places in the middle of the night. So it's a really charming show. Odakawa is a really great character. The art is beautiful, in a way that only like anthropomorphized animal characters can be. Like, the facial expressions of Odakawa are amazing. Shannon, have you seen this Walrus?
No, I have not. I've only seen, well, I've seen a still image. I have not seen the actual animation.
Right, but how good is this Walrus?
This Walrus is quite something.
It's a good Walrus. And actually, as soon as I saw like that still image of that Walrus, I was like, I'm watching this show.
I don't know. It looks like and a Family Guy character. Meh.
I'm
just kidding.
God damn it.
I'm just messing with you.
He's a good Walrus, and he is as grumpy as the pictures imply. So it's a really interesting show. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, it does kind of resemble Family Guy in a way.
Yeah, no, but there's definitely kind of a lot going on in this show, and like the first two episodes are just kind of really laying down some basic character work, and I'm really excited to see where this goes. So I definitely will be watching this to its conclusion. I don't actually think. I don't know what is this based on. I don't think it may be an original animation. I think I looked it up when I first started watching it.
Is it anything like Beastars?
Yeah, so it's an original Japanese anime production. I guess a manga was started to be serialized after the anime was started production, but not before it started airing. So, and it's done by. It's done by a company I've never heard of called OLM, which is really interesting. I guess they've done a lot of shows. A lot of shows people have heard of but wouldn't associate with like unique like original anime, like Yo-Kai Watch and Card Fight Vanguard, and then Odd Taxi, the show about the grumpy Walrus.
Grumpy Walrus. I mean. That sounds cute.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the things. I think it's I think that if I was going to compare it to an American show, I probably would compare it to a BoJack Horseman, where they use like, the cuteness and the animal characters mm-hmm. as a way to slip in kind of some more serious narratives. Odd Taxi. I definitely will finish this one, so I'll give periodic updates as we go along.
Cool. So, I've got two shows that I'm definitely watching all the way through. I'll go into one of the two right now. This is Don't Toy With Me, Miss Nagatoro. I had a lot of recommendations from friends who were hyped about this show that I decided to check it out. The synopsis over at Anime Planet, our good friends. A girl in a lower grade just made me cry. One day, Senpai visits the library after school and becomes the target of a super sadistic junior. The name of the girl who teases, torments, and tantalizes Senpai is Nagatoro. She's annoying yet adorable. It's painful, but you still want to be by her side. This is a story about an extremely sadistic and temperamental girl, and you'll feel something awaken inside you. I feel like that's a little more extreme than what it actually comes off as in the show. It definitely, in the very beginning of the show, comes off with... It seems like she's just teasing him to tease him. By the end of the first episode and the second episode, you realize she's more... this is how she's dealing with somebody she actually is interested in. I'm not going to go too deep into this because it's very much... I know the manga isn't really this way. It's not an actual four panel or four coma, as we like to call it here.
Young panel.
Yes. But it's very much a lot of constant jokes hitting fast. Sometimes they're a little over the top. Sometimes you're like, where's this going? And it always seems to stop just before it gets to, like, okay, thank goodness it didn't go there, but it was very close. It's very comedy anime. Like, it's hard. That's the best way I can put this, where I can't predict what she's going to do next. But there's an interesting scene in episode 2 where she goes out with a friend. And the friend's, like, introducing her to these two guys. And you realize that she's not interested in these two guys. She is cold. She is just downright blunt to the point where they're like, I gotta go to the bathroom. Each time she, like, basically shuts one of them down to the point where, like, it looks like they're about to cry. So you realize that, yeah, what she's doing is messing with somebody that she likes, but she doesn't know how to show it, so she just teases him to the point where he's frustrated, but you know he's in, you know, it's very sadist and masochist in a way, in the sense that he feels annoyed by it, but he can't help but kind of being like, please stop, and then he doesn't actually try to stop her. And he starts thinking about her more, and I don't know how they're going to incorporate the rest of her friends, which I know comes, where all of a sudden, I don't know if it's going to go to just straight teasing at that point, or if they're going to help Nagatoro. I don't know. I haven't gotten past episode 2. I really look forward to see how this is going to go. I also got the manga recently through one of the Humble Bundles, so I look forward to checking that out. I think it's a really funny anime. It's kind of ridiculous. Looking at the discussions of Anime Planet, somebody else said masochist, submissive guy type thing, but they say it's more on an emotional level. It's not like a physical S&M thing. But I really enjoy it. I was like, wow, this show's really good. The voice actress of Nagatoro is fantastic in this role. And the voice actress is... So I can get it for people here. Of course, I can't find it when I'm looking for it. Sumire? Somebody's going to get mad at me for pronouncing this wrong. Sumire Uesaka. Trying to see who else she's done. Oh god, I'm so old. She's born in 1991. Let's see. Yeah, she's been in a lot of stuff. I didn't recognize her voice, but I haven't been watching as much of the newer stuff, but I really enjoy what she did with this role. She nails Nagatoro to a T. And I think if you're looking for a ridiculous rom-com with a bit of ecchi to it, it's funny. The 24 minutes go by so fast because I'm too busy laughing most of the time. So I recommend this one.
Cool.
There will definitely be some people who are turned off by it, and it's funny. So before this show came out, I want to put this at the end. People, weebs, were on Twitter claiming that SJWs were going to come for this show.
Oh my god. I don't want to have this conversation.
It turned around.
I saw that.
But it turned around. Now the weebs are pissed because the translators on Crunchyroll have decided to throw in words like sus. Mm-hmm. And the weebs are in a frenzy, flipping the fuck out that they decided to go with slang. That's kind of like the in thing right now, which is what a lot of things do.
Well, but it's if they're using Japanese high school slang and it's being translated as American slang, that is perfectly acceptable.
Exactly.
And I think that's what's happening with this, because I saw that discourse on Twitter about this show.
But it's happened like the same, since I started into anime, because not everything translates to our culture.
And you know, like, there has been, there, like, I remember the days of fan subs when you would have people claiming that, oh, well, you know, they put out the full version, the real version on DVD, but the translation's not as good as the fan sub.
Or the ones who are like, this doesn't have honorifics. And it's like, get over yourself.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, the people who get mad that they don't translate the honorifics into the fan sub, I'm like, if I can hear them say Kun while I'm watching it, or Chan, or anything like that, or San, like, I don't need it always. I can still hear what's being said.
Yeah, there's as long as the intention is being translated, you don't have to add things that are just only applied to the Japanese language. It's silly. So, in certain contexts, translating something as sus, if they're saying Japanese memes, is perfectly okay.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if it's the Japanese meme, but she says in there, "You're acting twice as sus as usual." Which isn't like it doesn't even feel like it's forced in there. As you hear that word so much nowadays, I don't really notice. And there are people who are happy that this is happening, because all those people who were like freaking out that this show is going to be attacked is now being attacked by the people who are in fear of it. I love it.
It's super silly. I mean, you know, it's like frankly, sus is slang I use. As a 33-year-old man, so.
Dude, Bling Bling made the dictionary, so. You know, sometimes slang takes over. Yeah, I agree, that was a mistake. It's a fucking terrible term. Bling is fine. Bling. Well, no, I should say Bling made the, whatchamacallit, not Bling Bling.
Anyway, so I'm going to talk about To Your Eternity. Which is, it's based on the manga of the same name, and I want to describe this show, and it's going to sound fucking bonkers.
I think I have the manga for this because of Humble Bundle.
Yeah, and let me part of my method of deciding what I'm going to watch is I kind of look at
what's pretentious as shit.
What's pretentious as shit, and then I pick that. No, I go through the Anime News Network reviews, see like the average star rating, and I pick what seems to be pretty popular. Or opposite, really? I pick what's gotten like one stars, and that's what I'll balance my viewing for.
You'll watch one of the terrible ones.
Well, for example, the Ramonu Fairy, the first episode was all one stars on the Anime News Network reviews, but the second episode, and then when I went back at the second episode after I watched the first two, was getting good reviews. So it's like, yeah, that balanced out with what my opinion was.
Yeah.
But that's how I do it. I don't actually read the reviews or the summaries. I just see, okay, they're saying this is interesting. This might be interesting. So this show, it starts off with an omnipotent voice, and the omnipotent voice sends a reflective sphere to Earth, and the reflective sphere takes the form of a rock and then sits on the ground for an unknown number of years.
Okay.
That's how the show starts. And then snow falls, and then a wolf comes along and dies on the rock, and then the sphere becomes the wolf. And then the wolf was injured when the sphere took its form, but then the sphere is able to heal itself, and basically it becomes this wolf. And it has the wolf's memories, but doesn't quite understand what the mannerisms are supposed to be. So the sphere as the wolf makes its way back to the hut of a young boy. And this young boy is the only surviving member of a clan who lived in this ice wasteland, and the boy, the wolf who had died was his pet, and he hadn't seen him for 2 months. So he's very excited to see his friend back, and, you know, he takes him in, he feeds him, he actually kind of teaches the wolf how to eat, because the sphere doesn't know how to eat. And you kind of get an idea of what happened here, is that, once this kind of, whatever this winter is, started to descend on this place, the majority of the adults and children packed up and left, but the wolf had attacked the boy's leg and injured him so that he couldn't make the journey. And so he had to stay behind and take care of the elderly, but the rest of the people went on and to find what he described as the promised land, which has something called fruit and is plentiful. So he's been there alone for, I think it was 5 years. All of the elderly have died. And he is slowly breaking down the wood from the villages, the empty village huts, to burn for fuel. And the wolf is, you know, this wolf is his only friend. So then he decides that he's going. He feels healthy and strong enough to make the journey. So he packs up, and him and the wolf make their way to try to find the promised land. And do well a couple days, and then he falls and he gets injured, and they struggle on, and they, you know, as they go, they find these markers that mark this route, and then eventually he comes to one of the stones, which is supposed to mark the route, but it's just crossed out. So whatever pathway that he was being led down is now blocked off. And then shortly after that rock, he finds the destroyed and abandoned wagons that were his village. And at that point, he just turns around, he goes back, and he goes back to his hut, and he then succumbs to his injuries. And then the wolf, you know, saddened and crying, takes the form of the boy, and then the first episode ends with the boy leaving this hut and walking out into the greater world. So it's a kind of a super interesting setup, right? Because it's clear that something is happening. There is some kind of climate emergency happening, and whatever this is, it's, you know, whether this is like an actual We don't know the setting. We don't know like the time period. If this is Earth, this could be an actual like indigenous tribe somewhere that actually lived on a place that used to be, you know, plentiful, and then there was a minor climate change which happened throughout time that destroyed them. Or this could be far future, end of the world kind of stuff. So we don't really know.
Or do we?
Anyway, this show is pretentious as shit, and I'm super excited. I'm super excited to watch it.
I can't wait for your review in 10 weeks. Like, fucking shit.
The music is really good. The art is really good. It's everything is treated very sincerely. Like, you know, this like it was really painful to watch. Like the excitement of this boy who sees his wolf friend again, because, you know, he's been alone for 2 months, and this was his only companion, and the wolf, without the orb, the wolf died, and the boy probably would have died alone. You know, like the last thing he does before he leaves his village is he makes a drawing of all of the people who used to live there on his wall and leaves it. You know, so it's like it's being treated very sincerely. And I the tone was captured very well, all the way including like part of the transformation is like that in order to become another living creature, he has to have like a sincere connection to it. And so if the wolf, if the orb as the wolf did not actually grow attached to the human, he would not have been able to become the human when the human died. And that, I think that's treated very well. It's super interesting. It's something like I've never, like, you know, because like some of these what Mike calls pretentious as shit shows that I like. You know, like Promised Neverland. Like, I've heard of Promised Neverland a bunch before the anime came out.
No, this, that's just, you watch that if somebody's hurt you in your life.
I've never...
Deeply.
Never heard of this, and it's, you know, it's Kodansha, and it's, but it's not Shonen Jump. It's a different Shonen magazine. And it's, the manga is by a first-time mangaka? Not a first-time mangaka, but, you know, oh, it's, well, okay, so they don't, actually, so they, a pretentious as shit mangaka. No, Marduk's, they did Marduk Scramble, which I've never seen, but
that
I
was
know
a
that's
book.
Like a,
no, I think that was a straight novel. No, but I'm saying the same author,
did,
or are you talking about
they
the
did
director?
They did the manga for Marduk Scramble.
Okay, I was going to say Marduk Scramble is actually a book.
Okay, so they did the art, and then their original work was A Silent Voice, which was a very critically acclaimed manga that became a pretty good anime. I haven't seen the anime, but I've heard the people who have watched the movie.
Yeah, I cried.
And you only saw the movie, or you watched the anime?
The movie.
Or the manga as well. Yeah, so I definitely heard people really like that movie, but then, like, if they go on to the manga, like, the manga, I guess, treats those characters a lot better than the movie does, just because of time.
Yeah.
It just has more time to flesh them all out. So, yeah, so... Same manga because of Silent Voice, which I know is very critically acclaimed and something that's been on my radar for a while. So, yeah, so super excited for this. And again, this is one of the two shows that I'm gonna definitely be finishing, and we'll let
sounds like
know.
You and I both are gonna have shows we're definitely finishing, because I have one more, and it's my favorite show of the season. I've been killing slimes for 300 years and maxed out my level. So. I've talked about this light novel. I love the light novel. It is slice of life to a T with an interesting harem style that's not really a harem. It's more a family harem. It sounds weird. I'll just go into it. So, Azusa basically dies from overwork in Japan. Shocking, right?
Wait a minute.
is this
one of those isekais?
It's definitely isekai.
That I hear so much about.
So, she dies from overwork in Japan. When she is being reborn to this world, she tells the goddess, I want a relaxing life, stay the same age, and be basically immortal. So, she gets her wish. She has a house in the highlands near... a town, and she starts killing slimes around the house just to pass time. She's enjoying it. Peace, quiet, lovely area. After 300 years, she heads into town, and they convince her to sign up for the guild, and the guild master or the guild clerk freaks out because she's level 99. She's like, please don't let this get out. I don't want... Oh shit, how far did I go silent? Do you know when?
You're probably fine on Audacity's side.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Oh no.
Oh,
I clicked
shit.
The
oh, shit.
Do you know when I went silent?
No.
Scott, do you remember what I
was
talking about?
It was
about?
Like 45 seconds ago.
Did I talk about the red dragon yet?
You have not.
What about her hitting level 99?
The last thing I heard was she went somewhere.
Okay.
Or like she...
Went to town.
Yes.
So she finally went to town. Sorry about that. I didn't realize I had gotten my clip of the headphones caught on something. And I
hit
the
mute
button. Well,
you were so excited to talk about these slimes.
I I accidentally hit the mute button. So my apologies. So she goes to the town, gets convinced to sign up for the Adventurers Guild. She's maxed out at level 99 after 300 years of just killing slimes. Because she wasn't really trying. It just happens. She begs, hey, can you please not tell anybody? It gets out. Adventurers show up, want to fight her as the Witch of the Highlands. And she's like, I don't want to fight. Defeats them. She has no choice. Then a red dragon shows up. And after defeating the red dragon, turns out the dragon transforms into a younger girl, teenage girl named Laika, who is now comes in as basically her understudy slash pupil. And Azusa is now her master. Not because Azusa wanted to, Laika refused to leave. So it kind of starts the family harem, and not in an incest way. What this is, it's the first person to move into this home where she has extra rooms that she's just been living in forever. And she's like, oh, what's one more person? And you kind of see how that's going to go throughout. I know how it's going to go from. But episode two, you come to find out that slimes are trying to get revenge. It's a young girl shows up to the house and goes, hi, mom, or mama. And she's like, what? And Laika's like, you have kids? And she's like, no. Like, it creates a whole, like, little comedy scene. Turns out the young girl, Falfa, is coming to warn her mom that Shausa is her twin sister, is coming to kill her as revenge for killing all those slimes. They're slime spirits. You find out that the young girls, after so many were killed, were kind of born out of all the dead slime souls. Turns out both of them get convinced not to kill Azusa, even though Shausa tried very much so. And end up also living as her daughters in the house. And this is why I call it a family harem. It's like she's gathering family around her. After living 300 years of peace and quiet, her world starts livening up. And it kind of ends this episode with the two young girls. I already know as how it's going to continue. It is a great comedic slice of life. There'll be action here and there. But I love the light novel, and I freaking love this anime already. It's nailing the light novel to a T. It cuts out a little bit of the more long-winded fluff. So if you want a little bit more surrounding these characters and the events that are happening here, the light novel is a great thing to read after watching the anime because it'll expand upon what you've seen. I could see people who love the light novel could be a little turned off with how quickly things transpire in the anime, but they got 12 episodes. And they're not doing a bad job of it. They're nailing the points they need to, and it's well animated. It's funny. I really look forward to seeing how they bring in all the other characters. So this is one I'm finishing because I love, like I said, I love the light novel. I love this anime already. It hits exactly what I was hoping it would do. Unlike, what was it? Didn't I say to make my abilities average in the next life, where there were some misses where they started moving things around in the order of how things happen in the light novels and changing up the origin story. So this one did not really screw that up. So yeah, I've been killing slimes for 300 years and maxed out my level. Highly recommended if you're looking for a slice of life comedy.
All right. Hey, that's a good endorsement as any.
Hey, it's an overpowered main character that's not just going around beating every boss they come across.
True. And you know, as for you read a lot of these light novels, so for you to endorse one so heavily, I'm not gonna dismiss that offhand.
I've never heard of Studio Revo-Root.
All right, so we've come to the end of our preview show. I think we covered a lot of a varying degree of shows.
Yeah, I would say quite. Yes.
And we are way over, so apologies to everyone because I was late. I'm just going to say that publicly right now.
Apologize to Shannon now.
I am apologizing to Shannon.
I accept your apology.
She just said I don't.
This is what do I say here?
This is the Otaku and Review Podcast.
Yeah, I've been Scott Spaziani from, you can find me at otakuinreview.com where I posted nothing. You can also find me on Twitter, twitter.com/ScottSpaziani, where I post a bunch of Marxist-leaning propaganda. And, of course, you can watch me on twitch.tv/GundamPilotSpaz, where I play a bunch of RPGs or stuff. Last weekend had a drunken Katamari stream. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, that
weekend
sounds fun.
Last. Interesting.
Yeah, well, yeah. I drank a lot of alcohol, played a lot of Katamari, beat that game. That's a good video game.
Yeah, beat it.
I beat it, all right. Shannon!
Yes!
I hear you have some kind of internet tune.
I do. So you can find me on Twitter, Perfect Serenade, and you can find my webcomic on Webtoon and Tapas called Lucifer's Ace. Mike!
Go. Okay. I have been Mike, a.k.a. G Nitro. Go check out my website, g-nitro.com, for all the latest K-pop and not as weekly beer and vinyl pairings lately, because I just been busy with work shift schedule changes, so they've been put off to like every 2 or 3 weeks. But you can check me out at Twitter, Instagram, G Nitro. And don't forget, if you're interested, you can come hit me up about joining my Discord, where you can watch some stuff with us.
Yes.
May is going to be the anime month, where we're going to have 2 hours, 3 Fridays out of the month, watching some anime together. One each, well, 2 of the Fridays will be one 2000s to present, one 1980s or 1990s, and then one of the times we'll be watching an entire 4-episode series. So I look forward to that. I think it's going to be fun. Going to be some good
Nitro,
times.
Why don't you tell everyone about our next episode?
Oh, and our next episode is our Bubblegum Crisis episode, the show I chose for us to watch. Can't wait to discuss that.
It's a good one.
Because we get to rag on boomers. Yeah.
Damn those boomers. So we'll talk to you in two weeks' time.
Doses.